welcome to episode 22 of Hardcore Gaming 101.net's top 47,858 games of all time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and make mine pumpkin spiced is something I have never, ever said. My panelists today are...
I'm Kyle.
I'm Satanga here.
Kirk Coletta, Disco Alucard.
On this podcast, we have three rules. Pur voto pravilo, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Vittoro pravilo, you can nominate one game at a time via Twitter by hitting me up at GC9X. Tretto pravilo, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games that have already been ranked. You want to see the master list for yourself, including which games have been ranked, where they are ranked, and who nominated what? Check it out at bit.ly/47kgames. And remember, if you want to guarantee that we'll rank your game as soon as humanly possible, include that game in a 5-star iTunes review. If you can't get on iTunes for some reason, you bucktooth hillbilly, I guess you can check give us a 5-star review on Stitcher too. That's also great. Stitcher's a great great way to listen to podcasts, by the way. I just got $20. Okay, our next game for this show is Bangai-O, which was nominated by Pete Barbero 1. On Twitter. It was developed by Treasure. It was published by, I think, a different company in each territory. Publisher in North America was Conspiracy Entertainment, those purveyors of quality.
And I have to say, the most 90s possible company name, Conspiracy.
Hey, wait a minute. Who's that speaking right
well,
now?
Well, wait. We have a new voice here. To help us out on this one, we have Bobinator, who...
Yo, he bothered to play it.
Yeah, it's just really not the same show without Bobinator. And please, on Twitter, at Robert Nader, send him your love because he deserves it. But it was published by Conspiracy Entertainment in North America. It was published by Swing! Exclamation point Entertainment in Europe. And it was first published for the Nintendo 64 in Japan. But we're going to be ranking the Sega Dreamcast version, which is probably the ideal version.
Is anyone aware of what the differences are between the two versions?
The Dreamcast version has a lot more. It has mostly the same levels, but it has like more background graphics. It has a lot more tile sets. There's some pretty substantial differences in the mechanics, which I'm going over the article I wrote like 8 years ago, so I might be wrong about it. But maybe we should talk about how the game works a little bit more.
Earliest release date for the Dreamcast version was December 9th, 1999 in Japan. I want to point out that this is not long after the Dreamcast launch, but also I want to point out that the N64 version of the game, I believe in Japan, came out like in September of 1999. So there's very little time in between the two, and they were almost certainly working on them concurrently.
Yeah, I've seen people describe it as like, you know, like an enhanced version of the N64. And it's like, no, it's really, I don't think that's the case. They pretty much shipped this off to the manufacturer within like a month of the N64 one going gold kind of deal. So it's not.
The N64 one shipped and you're like, all right, let's finish this.
So would this be like comparing Turtles in Time to Hyperstone Heist in a way? Like they're two things that do the same thing but different-ish? I don't know.
It's a weird situation. Not really. Like Hyperstone Heist is like Turtles in Time with some slightly different levels than on the Genesis, whereas this is basically the same game with better graphics and different mechanics.
I mean, they felt that the game was similar enough that they didn't call it anything different. Just to confuse everyone, they were like, Bangai-O. They're the same game, guys. Just totally believe us. The N64 one had a really limited release, though. Japan only, and like 10,000 copies, which is insanely short. I don't know how much it costs, but I assume it's pricey.
Japan.
I bought it a couple years ago. It wasn't that much.
Nobody cares about Japanese N64 games. So
except Sin Punishment, yeah, which was also Treasure.
No, I mean, I bought Sin Punishment for like $20. Like, it's nothing.
Oh, well, to be fair,
Evangelion game, because I seem to remember that one got pricey.
Well, to be fair, not a lot of people care about N64 games here either. They are definitely the most bargain-binnable cartridges ever.
I was doing research for a rare game stuff. The most expensive Nintendo 64 game I could find was based off this manga anime called Getter Love. And the game itself is like a combination of a board game and a dating sim. But that's the only
game. Sign me up.
Yeah. Like, it's very heavy in Japanese language, so like nobody cares about it here, but it goes for like $100 over there.
Word of being dating sim makes me think of like the Monopoly pieces, like smooching each other. It's like the little like Scotty dog and the boot are just like going out on dates, like drinking out of the same milkshake. And
how this game was played, did we? Because basically the premise is that there's this like a map of varying size, and it's really simple. You just have to blast your way through stuff and get to the boss at the end, which in more stages than not is usually just an immobile core, so it's really just like destroying a special target, and that usually involves flying through a bunch of bullets and then like shooting a lot of missiles. Go ahead, Bob.
You can almost call it like a free-roaming, maybe not free-roaming, more open shmup, really.
It is very shmup-like, but the fact that you're like a mech and you're going in all sorts of different directions, it's not even like a free-roamer like Time Pilot either. It's a little hard to qualify because you're allowed to go at your own pace. But, oh, except you do have a time limit, right. So...
I'd like to bring up one thing about the game I do think is kind of cool. There's an unusual way this game handles smart bombs, like... Basically, the more projectiles that are around you when you use a smart bomb, which shoots a bunch of missiles or lasers depending on which of the two characters you're controlling at the time, the more projectiles you'll unleash, up to a maximum, I believe, 400.
Yeah, 400 is correct.
And you get this really cool and actually pull that off, but you gotta be like basically surrounded, about to die.
Well, the way it works is like the power of your attack based on how close the bullets are to you. So if you're absolutely surrounded by bullets and you press the attack button at the exact right time, you'll just send the maximum amount of missiles.
Can do lasers because you have two different mechs that you play as simultaneously and toggle between them.
Yeah, and the difference between them is like what? The way they reflect off of walls, I think?
Yeah, missiles home, I think, initially. Or do they not home?
Yeah,
but the lasers bounces at weird angles.
Yeah, the missiles home, lasers bounce, and for some reason you somehow change between a boy and a girl pilot as you do so, which I don't know how the logic on that works exactly, but I don't know. It's
Japan Mecha.
This game is Japanese. I don't even know how to qualify its sense of humor, let's say, but...
It's just like, it's very surreal Japanese, just like... comedy.
I can't even tell if the translation's supposed to be bad or if it's just Treasure's never been great with story, let's be honest. And
the translation seems very much, it's like a machine translation that someone who speaks English looked over and just tweaked a bit. That's what it feels like.
I remember hearing from somebody on a message board that it was like they knew what they were doing. Like it was just so bizarre, the Japanese script, that they had to do something just like really, really strange, like a really off-kilter writing style to sort of encapsulate that.
I kind of appreciate it is unique, and I actually kind of do look forward to dialogue in this game because it's all so stupid.
Well, because they basically, because there's a lot of levels. How many levels is there? Does anyone know the exact
44.
Number? 44. All right. 44. There's a lot of levels, and since most of them don't end with boss fights, they end with you shooting the core negotiates with you and just threatens you like arbitrarily.
They don't even threaten you, they just like ramble and then you kill it.
My favorite core encounter was like some sort of sheep holding a corncob pipe that narrates an incredibly irrelevant film noir situation that is just
he has a glass of whiskey in his hand.
Yeah, that's right. Now, this game can genuinely be funny, but like it's enemy interactions are complete gravy. It's just like, you know, the focus is just blowing crap up, and that's this game really mostly just stays on topic with that. Anything else is just window dressing. But
this does feel like they backported something to justify the game, because really it's, you know, it's very mechanical, it's very Treasure. It's like, we're making a shmup, the elements are, it's kind of like a multi-directional shooter, and it's got arenas and, like, vague puzzle elements, kind of, not really. You collect fruit, and you blow up buildings, because why not? That's what heroes do, and that's the whole game.
Based on something, what could it be? What the game did not emerge whole cloth, right? There was a predecessor, not a predecessor, but like a spiritual predecessor.
Are we talking
game.
About Vexter, perhaps? Because that's like the first thing I'm thinking. Maybe that's.
I think I know what you're referring to. If anyone would want to, should I that, go in on that? Or
that's why you're here.
Is that the Hover Attack game?
Right. Yeah, Hover Attack. It's a bunch of Japanese computer systems, the X1 and a couple of others I'm afraid I don't recall the name of right now.
It's on the and PC-88 and the Sharp MZ-2500.
Right, thank you. Apparently it was going to be a remake, but I guess they... I don't know if it was right to or they just want to do their own thing or what.
I mean, like, clearly they must have... Like, because if you look at the screenshots or watch video, you're like, okay, I can totally see Bang I.O. Like, clearly they just went, let's just go... It just went, like, crazier and crazier until it's like, okay, it's not a remake anymore. It's a completely different experience.
Yeah, like, when I first played the game, it always kind of reminded me of, like, the Atari 400 games I used to play when I was a kid, in that you were, like, a small character in a large level. And, I mean, nothing ever had that same explosive amount. But then when you go back and see, oh, it was actually kind of was based off of, like, an early 80s arcade computer game, it kind of all makes sense.
It's interesting because, I mean, one of the chief complaints that people leveled at this game when it came out... It is because it was a Dreamcast version, obviously, so it had to be built kind of for the N64. It doesn't really show off any fancy Dreamcast effects, which, you know, when the Dreamcast launched, you're like, okay, well, why does it look like this? It doesn't have a lot of, I guess, graphical pizzazz. Like, it's like...
I think aside from some particle effects and how many sprites game can fit, you could probably do this game on the SNES or at least the Saturn.
It's mostly the sprites that the amount of sprites on the screen at the same time, because then when you have like what 200 300 400 like yeah, the Super Nintendo would choke if you had like 20 things in the same line at the same time.
Yeah, 400 missiles is the maximum, and it's pretty glorious to see that.
They all have like explosions, and they have laser trails, and then there's a number, and the thing I most liked about this game is that when you set up the explosion that high, it just like brings the Dreamcast to its knees. Like, it just totally struggling to get that number out, and it's just, like, just seeing the way that these numbers and all the math going behind it is just obliterating it is very gratifying.
Yeah, like when Metal Slug does a similar thing where it's like when explosions go off and the machine stops working, you're like, yeah, I did it. I blew the machine up. I'm the greatest. I mean, because we've got it here, does the N64 version even push that many missiles? Because you did mention that you were going to maybe talk a little bit about the differences.
I don't remember if it pushes that many. The main difference that I can remember is the way that it recharges your special attack. Because in the Dreamcast one, it sort of like, you had to charge up your thing, but if you were able to destroy enough things in attack, then you would recharge itself up. So it sort of created a feedback loop of, you know, if you pulled off the attack well, you could do it again. If you were really bad at your timing, then you kind of screwed yourself. But in the Nintendo 64, I think that was powered by getting fruit, which the fruit is still in the Dreamcast game, but I don't think it...
Yeah, it's just for points. I don't think
it's just for points, yeah.
But, yeah, I guess, yeah, did we mention that, like, you know, you can only generate really big explosions when, like, a lot of projectiles are, like, right about to graze you? It's like, you have to really, like, bungee jump with this game. You gotta come to the brink of death before you make a giant comeback. And I really do like that thrilling aspect, counterattack aspect to the gameplay.
That's what totally makes the game for me.
Yeah, definitely. It is a thrill ride. It gets really hectic, maybe a little too hectic at some points, but that feeling just turning it around in a single 400 projectile burst, that's what gaming's all about to me, just shit like that. It's just really impressive.
On the other hand, I do feel like if you kind of... This game is a little bit tricky to feel like you're playing it right, or when you don't get it right, the game is really, like, rough. Like, you're just like, oh, everything's going wrong, and I'm not doing this at all.
That's typical Treasure, to be honest.
That is my problem. But even more so than most Treasure games, I would say. Like,
you can very easily, like, you have a long life bar, but I don't think there's much of an invincibility period, so you can just get, like, juggled real quick and get killed very easily for one minor mistake.
I want to say it has a bit of a curve, but considering there are so many levels, I want to say that it's inconsistent, and then some are just randomly easier than others, and then there's others that's just like, oh my god, why can I beat this? Like, I can't remember the exact level, but like, you first face the guy who is actually the final boss later, but that early on, he is just a pain in the a-hole. I think he's able to just randomly turn invincible also, or something like that. There are some points where the difficulty balance is really watery, and you'll just really die suddenly without knowing it. You will die a lot with this game, and occasionally it does seem random, so... It might be one that requires some practice, and occasionally a little bit of luck to win, which might not be to everyone's suit.
Well, I guess it's because this one, it doesn't... you're like previous gaming skills are not really super transferable. It really wants you to learn the Bang.io system. You know, like with the shmup, you can play a shmup and you're kind of doing okay. Scrollers, yeah, it's fine. This game, it's like if you don't play it with this like slingshot, like you're about to, you know, get everything really dangerous and then turn it around. If you don't play like that, it's not going to be fun. And
right. Unless you're a really one of those rare people who's really, really good at like bullet hell shooters and solar jetman.
it's quite the skill set to have.
Where do we want to put this in the big list?
I feel this game isn't as hard as some treasure games because it's got a nice structure. Like, every level its very own separate thing, and you have infinite continues, and even if you don't do it in your first try, you can just come back and just do it whenever, like a bite-sized experience, basically. I appreciate that.
It is nice that you don't have to repeat the whole game in order to beat the later levels.
That was normal at that time. I think what Bob and I are saying is that it's more like the game is really compartmentalized, where it's like, I'm going to give this a shot for like 20 minutes. And if I can't get it, I'll try it again, you know, next weekend. You know, like whenever you get it doesn't feel like it's punishing you for not, you know.
There's nothing really to keep track of once you learn the basic mechanics. Everything is the same, basically. This is a tricky one to place. Like, personally, it's not really up in my favorite treasure game. It's a nice, like, it's nice, but I'm not, like, enamored with it or anything.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. It's fun, but, I mean, it's no Gunstar Heroes.
Well, nothing is ever going to be Gunstar Heroes, the greatest game ever, in my opinion.
But it's not even a Guardian Heroes. It's maybe, like, a Mischief Makers.
I'll say this. Oh, I like it better than Ikaruga.
Whoa!
Oh, no.
Hot take, Bob. That might...
You're going to get us, I think Ikaruga is, like, it's harder. It goes much harder, much faster, but... there's an elegance to Ikaruga that I think is lacking in Bang.io. I don't think it's Bang.io.
That's what's great about it. Just blow it up.
No, I know. It's designed like that. It's kind of like, in order for it to be this, it cannot be this. But like Ikaruga is such a fantastic shmup game, and this one's like, well, it does really well at what it does, but I don't know if what it does is something that I want very often.
How many
often.
Shooters are there, and how many Bang.io games are there?
Yeah, but...
Yeah, could... yeah.
I mean, there's three Bang.io games, to be fair, so...
They keep making them. It's really interesting that Treasure is like, they really want to get this game right, because they've made it several times, which is odd for them.
But they did it best
first time. The second and third time, they just... Like, they didn't know what else to do with it. Just like the difficulty curve, like at least it's linear. Like you have to beat like levels 1 through 44 in order, but like there's no real structure to the GS1. Like you can start on the last level if you want, because it's not really the last level. It's just kind of a game that you sit down and screw around with.
But not ranking the DS version or ranking the best version, which is the Dreamcast version. And I'm saying like there is lots of shooters. There's even a lot of bullet hell shooters, and there's even a lot of cave shooters. Only so many Bang.io games, and I think that's important.
Lower than Sin and Punishment, higher than Marvel Land.
All right, I can work that.
I totally trust Kurt with this. He's quite authoritative on all.
Don't just hand over the keys.
Argue with me.
All right. Well, I do really.
Yeah,
like...
sure. Just put it wherever you want because you have an opinion. That's not what we do here.
All right, fine. But hey. All right, look, are you forcing me to argue, or are you going to put your money where your mouth is?
No, I mean, like, I don't disagree with the general area. Like, you know, there's a lot of, like, good games in that area. Like, this, I think that's the area where Bang.io belongs, because I don't care if Xerxes thinks it's unique. He thinks a lot of things are unique, and we keep putting them higher than they probably should be, but...
No.
it is kind of like... If you like Bang.io, like, because it's a weird little game, and someone's going to be like, this is literally the best game ever. But for everyone else, it's going to be like, it's pretty good.
Yeah, but really what if you're one of those people who's like, this is the best game ever, and you wouldn't have played it unless we recommended it?
They should listen to every episode anyway. It doesn't even matter where we put the...
Well, but if you really like this, there's nowhere else to
let's
go.
Look at, let's
there's
look at
nowhere gonna, else to go.
I'm gonna put a game here. We're gonna look at Devil's Crush, and we're just gonna say Bang.io. Is it more or less interesting than Devil's Crush? Because I think it's a good kind of.
Oh, go ahead, Bob.
I would put it above Devil's Crush. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to place it slightly lower than that, actually. crap.
We were getting closer.
Okay, I was thinking between Snatcher and Master of Magic. I mean, Bang.io is really fun, but also kind of sloppy, and it's really, there's not a lot else like it.
A lot of other treasure games are sloppy. Like Ikaruga being as like well designed as it is kind of a rarity for treasure games.
It's
like even Gunstar Heroes,
it's about as long as like your average lunch. You know, yeah. that's the thing. It's like
they find anything that game
really, really like polished if it's only 20 minutes long.
Yeah,
seriously,
they were selling like a 20 minutes long game at full price. It had to be really solid, it had to be
really good.
You know, if I had to pick between like Devil's Crush and Bang.io, I would probably prefer Devil's Crush just a little bit. Mostly because I don't remember the music in Bang.io. I don't remember a single sound or melody or thing in it. So at least Devil's Crush has a theme.
Devil's Crush is just video pinball. There's so many video pinball games.
That's reasoning, yeah.
When you rip out like a little bit of Bang.io, it's an arena shooter. I know it's not super fair to it. But, you know, okay, well, Kurt, you can step in here, you know. And if you like it, do you like Devil's Crush less?
Yeah, I think I like Bang.io more. I mean, I'm with you on the music because I think Devil's Crush the music is like 50% of why that game is as awesome as it is.
It's a huge deal. It's very.
But
okay, so that settles that.
Yeah, above Devil's Crush.
Above Devil's Crush, below Street Fighter 3.
Okay, that's good.
All right.
I can go for that.
Sweet.
That's fine to me.
Okay.
Sold.
Okay, our next game for the show is Jurassic Park, which was nominated by @GordCaptain, who nominated it via a 5-star review. I think he did his on Stitcher because iTunes was not possible. But if you can't do iTunes, a 5-star review on Stitcher is great. And just let us know that you did it on Twitter, @GC9X, because I don't really check the Stitcher reviews as often as I should. It was Jurassic Park was developed by Ocean Software, and it was published by Ocean Software for the Super Nintendo.
Yay.
Earliest known release date is October 1st, 1993 in the UK, which fans of the show will know stands for United Kingdom.
But maybe not for much longer, actually.
Yeah,
oh, it's Jesus.
Barely.
Let's not get into politics, right? Sociopolitics.
We're not going to, but I would like to say,
just leave.
Generally, when a game comes out in the UK first, that is immediately not the best sign. I mean, there's just...
Oh, well...
American gross-selling blockbuster, no less.
Well, let's be honest. Braden has always been... I don't want to say apologist, but some retro gaming enthusiasts have a more forgiving opinion about them than people from the U.S. might.
I think that is fair, and I really try hard not to dump on Euro PC games from this period just because I didn't play them. You know what I mean? But Jurassic Park is one of those games that I did play when it came out, when it was new, because, oh my God, Jurassic Park, got to play it. I love everything about this. It's got dinosaurs and it's got parks, and I love those two things.
What a franchise.
Really was. Like the weird thing about Jurassic Park is that it's a thing that, like, obviously you got to make games for this. But all the best Jurassic Park games came out after the original Jurassic Park game, because everybody's like, oh, we got to do better than that. And everybody kind of had their own answer to like, what's a better Jurassic Park game than this? It's a top-down action adventure type game, vaguely Zelda-esque. I'd say it's more vaguely Secret of Evermore-esque, but it's not even that good.
It's a pretty small world. Like if, when you picture like Link to the Past, you picture like quite a like a big world. Whereas this one, it might be quite substantial in size, but it feels really small because all of the characters and all the scales really like the characters huge. The dinosaurs are pretty huge. The level chunks are quite big, so it feels really kind of almost claustrophobic, despite the fact that it's big.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of
weapons suck.
I think it sort of dupes you into thinking it's bigger than it really is, just because you'll die a lot. And unlike Zelda, you actually have limited fucking continues in this piece of shit.
Well, we slipped up and revealed how we feel about this game.
Oops. I'm sorry, go ahead, Bob.
One thing, this game gives, like, no direction, and that's...
Actually, I consider it gives you less than no direction, because this is the game where the character points and starts looking in the wrong direction. If you follow where the character is aiming at, if you just hold down, you will pretty much get immediately murdered by two velociraptors, and then you'll just die. That's
which is
you
what
have
happened
to actually.
To me, like,
I did that like three again. Times.
Yeah.
I wasted about 40 minutes just going south. I'm like, what the hell is the problem? Like,
I can't do anything. I emulated this game. I don't own it. And I was just like, is this the emulator doing this? Is this like just wrong?
Here's
no.
the thing.
I tried three different controllers. It's no joke. Like, I really did. Like,
here's the thing. I was initially going to stand up for this one before I went on this episode, because I too grew up playing it. I can't remember if I've actually seen the film before I played the game, but it was just one of those games I ended up with somehow, and I thought its premise was at least interesting, but it was way too difficult. Even then, I felt.
Really?
But no,
I think there was some kind of promise in the Jurassic Park premise. Tell me more.
Oh, just that it was...
Joking. Everybody knew exactly what was great about this. It's like it was a super popular movie that everybody wanted. It was like a Billy and the Clonosaurus type joke there.
Oh, darn it.
Yeah, like even this game gets like the core mechanic, the core elements are in this game. Just to not be too unfair to this game, you play as Grunt, you have an electric laser beam gun, which was obviously one of the coolest parts of the movie. Yeah, like, it's a cattle prod, but every game that has it makes it like a electricity beam laser gun. Like, every single game does this, so I'm fine with that. And there's a bunch of dinosaurs. They're pretty well graphically realized. They're nice and big, and they look good. Yeah, the music is foreboding as shit. Like, oh my god, it's like...
The music's my favorite part. Ocean's like main composer, I think, Jonathan Dunn. He was often the best part of Ocean's not very good otherwise catalog.
I don't think of it too fondly, but I do think of it as better than most of its peers at that time.
Like most licensed games or Ocean games?
Better than US Gold, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, or two.
Better than LJN, we can say that, right?
Here's the
main credit I can give this game is that it kind of, it's not good, but it kind of delivers on its vague, like, promise. You get dinosaurs and stuff, you shoot them. You get to get first-person segments, which are terrible, but they exist, and it's pretty solid to see, I guess, on the SNES that it has that nice... first-person-y modes, even though it's... Well, I played one of them, and I forgot to get the night vision goggles, because I don't know where they are, and then I entered an area and die instantly.
I was never able to find them either. I did want to say something, though. This is still one of Ocean's better games... on the whole, and yet it is still kind of a mess. It's more well put together than most of their other sloppy games. Like, it tries to be competent, but, like, you know, a little more direction, a little more ease of use instead of just dropping you into this dinosaur-filled hell pit is... it would be, like... I just think it feels like one of those games that doesn't want you to win it. And it's like, why even make a game if it doesn't want to be beaten? in the first place.
Well, the big problem with it is that it feels like it's real. It's quite ambitious in terms of a lot of stuff in it. It's pretty ambitious. The problem is, instead of merely being bad, it's ambitious and bad, and that's not a good combination.
There's one thing I should bring up. This game kind of does something a lot of British games seem to try to go for, where they'll like have multiple different types of play to kind of compensate for the fact that none of the games it tries to be are very great. Like, most of the game is this overhead action-adventure kind of thing, and we've gotten the problems with that, but part of the game is an FPS, and given it's a FPS and SNES without a Super FX chip, it doesn't work very well.
It works better than I think it. Like, it actually works, which was surprising to me. It's supposed to have strafe buttons, but they seem to rotate the camera, so that's kind of useless, I think. But, they tried is what I'm going to give them on that. The level design seems horrible, like not good at all. There's no real sense of direction. It's just like a big maze that's a bunch of other big mazes, and you're supposed to go to one specific part of one specific maze to get the item you need to go to another part. So whereas, you know, Link to the Past, it feels like a very, like you explore a little bit and then you go, I probably have to go there. And that's where you're supposed to go. And then you get the item and you're like, oh, that unlocks there. And it's very clear and constantly kind of assures you, yep, you're going the right way. Whereas this game, it just pops up full screen text. Hey, there's a dinosaur here. Watch out. It'll eat your face. And then it does. And you're like, wow, that was really.
Oh, yeah. That's
DNA. That's in the SNES version.
That's another thing about this game I hate. It constantly gives you tips you've already seen. It blocks everything. You can't see where the things that are trying to kill you are because some stupid kid is telling you the things are spitting at you. Thank you, I noticed.
Yeah. It's great because they spit at you and they reverse your controls and they damage you. Oh, and raptors spawn out of nowhere. You can't see them. They just appear. It's like, okay, this is where a raptor spawns, and it just jumps out. Or a rock falls down, and it just instantly kills you. And it always sends you back to the center of the map, I think. Like, there's no, you know, you die, you go back to the center. So no matter where you go, if you go through a whole maze, and you're about to collect the egg, which is your goal in this game, to collect eggs, because that's what Grant did. Remember Grant?
No, he didn't.
Remember how he wanted to steal the eggs, and that was his goal in the movie?
No.
That's the thing. It's like
the problem with any Jurassic Park game is you did not get to control Jeff Goldblum, which is the point.
That is a total waste. I mean, no offense to Sam Neill, but you're not Jeff Goldblum. No. We want to play Jeff Goldblum.
I want to be Jeff Goldblum. I also want to point out that Jurassic Park also no game lets you like vindicate the lawyer who got eaten off the toilet by the T-Rex. I feel really like
it doesn't really use many digitized shots from the movie or anything. It's just kind of like just random stuff is just going on.
The best Jurassic Park game of this period, of this time period, was for the Sega Genesis. It was the Jurassic Park Rampage Edition, which is. Should be called Jurassic Park, the apology for the first Jurassic Park game. And because it was the game is like, oh, you want to play a Jurassic Park game? What you want to do is be a dinosaur.
like the dinosaur mode was great.
Stupid ass humans. That's what everybody wants to do when you play this game. It's like, this is like the genius of like the Jaws PS2 game. It's like, what you really want to do is you want to be Jaws, right? Exactly. Nobody wants to be Richard Dreyfuss, okay? It doesn't matter how great Richard Dreyfuss is. Nobody wants to play a game where I'm Richard Dreyfuss. You want to be Jaws. You want to be Jaws. You want to be a dinosaur in a Jurassic Park game. That is the point of the game.
Yeah, that's why
it's not quite the same time period, but the one where you actually run Jurassic Park is another interesting idea because at least you're like, yeah, I get to run Jurassic Park. That sounds fun.
Speaking of good ideas didn't work out, does anyone remember Warpath?
Can't say I do.
Right, yes. You play as dinosaurs and you fight each other and it's completely out of scale.
Jurassic Park game Warpath. And that game was just basically like a broke-ass Primal Rage, more or less.
Pretty much.
Jurassic Park didn't do great with a lot of its games. Fortunately, it didn't do great with this one either.
Yeah, there are two, maybe three good Jurassic Park games. Yeah. Rampage Edition is the first one. That's good. Although I do like how the NES game, like you go to these like computer kiosks and there's Mr. DNA all over them. Mm. I mean, your blood.
That's pretty nice. The Lost World arcade shooter that Sega made, right. That one's quite fun.
That's okay. That's true. Yeah. That's okay.
It's a light gun game. Like they're going to be okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It almost doesn't count. And then there's and Dino Crisis also can't technically count, I think.
That's a good game, though.
Yeah, it's a good game.
That's one I'm sad to miss out on.
I would say, like, the Trespasser is a...
Trespasser is kind of like the... It's a lot like this game in that it was very ambitious, but whereas that game kind of collapsed under it being, like, so ambitious it was never going to work, this game collapsed because they just did not have the competency to make the game, like...
Trespasser, you should still play because it's fascinating. This game, maybe not. And then
you
I
should
do
definitely
like...
put up this game so you can understand that you're like your initial threat is you'll just die because the game screws you over immediately, and that you'll probably electrocute yourself on a fence. Like that's the next step in this game is electrocute yourself.
I do want to throw out there though that although everybody like crapped all over the Telltale Jurassic Park game, like. It is exactly like The Walking Dead and Wolf Among Us and Batman and every other game that people. It is
why
the
did they
same
not like
thing.
That? What do people have against
people
that game?
Fickle.
I never played it.
It's just there's people no, didn't there's like no reason.
People didn't like it because it wasn't a popular enough license. But it is basically the same kind of game. As,
I mean,
especially
as we just Among established, Us. You don't play as the dinosaur in that, so nobody liked it. You know,
right?
If you had you the if you was the dinosaur player. And you had to make like choices as the dinosaur, that would have you know it'd be like. Do you eat the humans in the kitchen? Do you eat the humans in the power station? Oh, man, so many choices. Let's go.
It really should have been like a Jurassic Park corporate counsel, and you should have been the lawyer. You should have been like, you know what? I think this might be a bad idea. We're opening ourselves up to some huge liability issues. And oh, my God, Tyrannosaurus Rex. Oh, shit.
The T-Rex. Wait, guys.
It's like a Papers, Please game where you have to – like sign the legal documentation to get into the park, and it's like 3,000 pages long.
Where do we put this?
Yeah, let's put this game. Like, okay, I'm gonna say, and this is what I think is the only reason I think people liked this game. I'm pretty sure this was a game that when you would have played it, you probably somehow you would have gotten a guide. Like that would have been an SNES thing in like a book or a magazine or whatever it would say.
Nintendo Power probably had some like that. I bet.
Yeah, like, this is where the items are, this is where you have to go, this is where, like, so that you would have direction, because if you had clear direction, this game would, it wouldn't be good, but I could see how you could trick yourself into liking it. Only just mentioning that before we get into ranking, not to make it a higher rank, just like, I'm just going to cut that off.
No Jeff Goldblum in leather pants.
I'm really putting this in the, like, the Jones zone, like, I can't put it any higher than that, like.
I don't know. That might be a little.
The game starts you out, Satanga. The game starts you out pointing your face in the opposite direction that you need to go. I played this game for almost an hour before I figured out that I needed to actually go up.
And also, the weapon sucks. Problem. Like,
yes. I'll be honest. I was going to place it between Sewer Shark and Bill Lane Beer, but you guys sound like you want to drag it even lower.
I mean, can you justify, like, okay, look, okay, so Bill Lambier.
I can justify that because I don't want to talk about this for another second.
Okay.
Because, you know, at least some of those games had an interesting idea. This game took, like, the greatest license ever, dinosaurs and shit, and they've made a garbage game out of it. Like, an absolute travesty.
But Sewer Shark is, I mean, the name alone... But then again, Bill Laimbeer at Combat Basketball. I mean, the name alone, Bill Laimbeer is Combat Basketball. Like
you
Jurassic
put it
Park,
Wolf
Super
Kid,
Nintendo.
I'll handle that. But I'm not, like, I wouldn't go any higher.
Okay, let's do that.
Wait, you mean
no, wait, no.
Below
Bill
Laimbeer
at Combat Basketball.
Above Wall
yeah.
Street Kid.
Above
okay.
Wall Street Kid.
I will concede with this. That's good. That's good for a bad.
our last game for this episode is Bugs Bunny in Rabbit Rampage. I think there's an in there, right?
I don't know.
Bugs Bunny in Rabbit Rampage. It should be because that's very much like a cartoon. Like a
that's 1940s. The title, and it presents the game like it's a cartoon Rampage.
So this was nominated by Cleveland Gamer on iTunes, which makes me really want to say Cleveland Steamer, but I know I couldn't.
How appropriate.
This game was either nominated to punish us or because Mr. Cleveland had this game when they were younger and would have been like, this was a fun game, I guess. So I'm going to nominate this.
Let me put it this way. Mr. Cleveland Gamer gave us, or Mrs. Cleveland Gamer, we don't know.
Yes.
We're sexist.
But gave us this 5-star review on iTunes and nominated Bugs Bunny in Rabbit Rampage for the Super Nintendo. In that 5-star review, which means we had to do it ASAP. And that's what we're doing. I want to say that it was developed by Viacom New Media, those purveyors of quality, and published by Sunsoft, who were literal purveyors of quality up until the 16-bit era.
I don't know what happened to them by then. Like, I'm really curious because everyone loved them in the NES period. And then Air the Acrobat happened, and it just kind of went downhill from there.
I don't know either. All I can say is I long for the days of Uncle Fester's Quest, and I wish.
So I want to get back to like a small rant, I guess. This is a Looney Tunes game, and for whatever reason, there hasn't been really what I would call a great Looney Tunes game. Certainly not anything on the level of the Capcom Disney licensing thing they did.
Right. So, I mean, this came out, it was published originally in February 1994 in North America. And the immediate comparison, I think, Bob, is what you were about to say, is like the immediate comparison would be Mickey Mania, which was, I think, developed by Sony ImageSoft.
That one was a lot more quality than this.
Very, very good. Yeah. For what it was very good.
Or even something like, there's never been a Looney Tunes game as good as, say, DuckTales or the Magical Quest series. It's just,
no.
There's been games that you could consider good, playable, like Crazy Castle, but never great.
The best you can get, I think, might be Bugs Bunny Birthday Blowout for the NES.
Were you just trying to sell, like, a Bugs Bunny Birthday Blowout? Like, that was kind of...
Look, I'm doing the best I can. I love
Come on Bugs down Bunny. Here to Bugs That's Bunny Birthday Blowout. Said. Look, it's a sale. I mean, here's the thing. Everything must go. All the Looney Tunes must go. I think the problem with Looney Tunes games is that, like, the way the characters work compared to some of the other characters. Well, I know, like, yes, they don't usually get as good dev teams, historically speaking. But it's also kind of like all of the Looney Tunes characters exist in this kind of, like, godlike state where, like, they're just kind of, like, super magical creatures that everything that they do works or doesn't work, which doesn't fit a game. You know, like, when you approach, like, DuckTales or some sort of, like, thing, you know, it's like they're more normal. Like, stuff just happens to them.
There's a struggle. Right? There's the good guys and the bad guys, and the good guys struggling against the bad guys. Whereas Looney Tunes, like the cartoons, are, especially early on, it was like a sociopathic animal, like, struggles against, like a well-meaning, bumbling hunter. And that's what they did.
And that's the first level of this game, too.
Which is great.
Actually, this game is pretty much Duck Amuck, only your Bugs instead of Daffy.
What a twist!
Which spoilers.
Bad idea, because Daffy can handle that. Bugs cannot.
Well, it depends on which version of Daffy you're talking about. Let me put it this way. Like, this... Okay, so it is the Mickey Mania of Warner Brothers games. Looney Tunes cartoon-based games. But the problem is it's not as well made a game. But I do want to point out that whereas everybody's all about, the history of Mickey Mouse, like, there's so much history there. Let's really explore, like, the illustrious history of Mickey Mouse. There's Steamboat Willie and Plain Crazy, which is never recognized, but technically happened. And, you know, and it goes on, like, there's the band concert with, like, the color Mickey Mouse card. And then there's Fantasia, the Sorcerer's Apprentice, which is where Mickey became a Caucasian and never went back. And all this other weird stuff. And they can make a game out of that. But with Bugs Bunny, it was a bit more rough and tumble of a character on one hand. But also, it doesn't have the same kind of cultural cachet. Like, I think that people really love Bugs Bunny in at least North America because of Bugs Bunny was a great way to fill up time on cable television and Saturday morning television and stuff like that. But I don't know that people today still care the same way.
No, they keep trying to reboot Bugs Bunny and it never really sticks. So I've got to say that
Space Jam didn't do much wonders for the WB.
Well, Space Jam made no, that's not true. Like, I don't like that movie, but that movie made a ton of money. R. Kelly alone basically built his career on Space Jam.
No, you're right. I'm getting off.
So many sexual assault lawsuits that wouldn't exist if it weren't for Space Jam. So let's be fair to Space Jam.
Okay, so, I mean, like, this game
has a lot of Looney Tunes fan service in it, and that's what it is.
Great production values. Yeah. The sprites are huge. There's a lot of digitized speech. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Who remembers Nasty Canasta? Because he's one of the bosses.
I do. I do. Me too. There are exactly three cartoons where Nasty Canasta goes up against... I think there are two... No. There's one cartoon where it's Nasty Canasta versus Daffy Duck. And there are two... Nasty Canasta versus Bugs Bunny, or maybe I'm getting that backwards. But anyway, the idea that that character is even in a game is impressive to me because
it was definitely either they got tapes or they were just definitely fans of Bugs Bunny on the development team. There's no question that this wasn't just shipped off to some random like this wasn't shipped off to a Japanese studio who were told, you've got Bugs Bunny, and they made up a bunch of characters.
Off to Viacom New Media, which I believe would have owned Looney Tunes at this point.
So
the non-public domain Looney Tunes.
They had like a lot of stuff going on. I think, unfortunately, because they had these, you know, the production values are quite good. I would say it's kind of expected for a 94 SNES game. You know, it'll either look really solid like this, or it'll kind of just be cheap garbage. Like, those are kind of they're two extremes.
Let me put it this way. Like, before we move on, because I know where you're going to go, and you're going in the right direction, but I do want to say, like,
yeah, sure.
They could have made a Bugs Bunny game, and there have been Bugs Bunny games that were way less referential to the source than this was. I mean, this one starts out, your first enemy, granted there's like a billion of them, but your first enemy is a dog that is the dog that Elmer Fudd has.
I mean, look,
maybe three cartoons tops.
He's very recognizable. He's the Looney Tunes Bugs hunting dog. He shows up.
Yeah, compare it to the Crazy Cats.
There's more than one Bugs hunting dog. I'm just pointing this out. Like, there's more than one. And
it is a pretty big improvement compared to, say, Crazy Castle, where you, like, fight Sylvester, because Bugs has never, ever fought Sylvester, ever.
This is Bugs versus things that he fights. You know, it's not Bugs versus the Looney Tunes cast, which is nice.
Right, that's Birthday Blowout. That's like, it's like a Bugs Bunny game that has other Looney Tunes characters in it that are kind of related to the actual cartoons, which is the one thing that sets it apart from Bugs Bunny Crazy Castle.
I would say, like, you know, if you had have booted this up, you know, when it came out, you would have been like, wow, I recognize the background looks very Looney Tunes. It looks like, you know, the nice backgrounds that they had in the cartoons.
And the characters. It's got like, you know, like in the first level, you've got like the two different, the Warner Brothers, like AirSats, Chip and Dale, like QB and Birdie are in the game and they're everywhere. But, you know.
They had a compromise. They had to have enemies, so they made them.
And they did a good job.
Yeah, this game really does nail the aesthetics of Looney Tunes down pat. But it sure is a game.
Some grievances I have with this game. Mostly because the sprites are very well done, they're pretty huge, but that's a problem. Like, Bugs is a huge target, and there's like projectiles pretty much on the screen at all times. They typically homing in on you, so...
Well, I mean, the sprites aren't that much bigger than, say, Mickey Mouse in Magical Castle, or Mickey Mouse
Castle
in,
of Illusion? What's that?
Castle of Illusion.
Yes, but the You're game is... The same size, this game is not designed in the same way. This game constantly is like, jump that way. I don't know what's over there.
Go through this wall, because, I don't know.
Jump down into this cave, and then you'll be murdered by a bunch of dogs, because that's this game.
First level, there are two enemies. They are dog and slightly more brown dog. You know, I mean,
there's a red dog too, isn't there? He's hiding around.
Oh yeah, I mean, then you got like the chipmunks that I mentioned. But the point is, you like the way you fight these enemies is really frustrating. You've got the pies, which is a good, you know, I mean,
it's, you've got it's, a pie and a kick, and they're both like pretty much identical. So I don't know why you need.
I believe
you can't just like pie the dog and he disappears. It's like you pie the dog, and then you got to pie him again, and then he disappears.
If you keep mashing the pie button, he'll block, and it looks really nice because it's got a good little bit of animation. But it's nice.
Can you Mario jump on some enemies also? But like, not
it feels
all
kind of, but can, not really. But I tried to repeat it. Geez. Like sometimes like I could jump on them. And sometimes I couldn't. I'm like, I don't know. I just
play Castle of Illusion and you've got a much better idea of what you should do with this. Like Castle of Illusion has projectiles, but they're limited. So you have to kind of think about it. But then you can also jump on the enemies. And a lot of the game is built around jumping off of enemies, bouncing, moving up to different platforms, finding different ways through stages.
But you do get other weapons in this. That's one big part of this game. The levels are...
There's the dynamite. There's like the dog bones. There's the way you can save your progress by putting down the bugs was here.
That's another thing. That's a bad idea to have to place your own checkpoints.
It kind of is. But I respect them for thinking about it.
Yeah, I also...
I don't even always have to do that. But whatever. Yes, Satango.
I also want to say... the level structure, while not quite as badly, sort of hinges on what I like to call Amiga platformer syndrome. They're just kind of boring and monotonous and, like, you know, maybe not as unfocused, but, like, it just seems like there's not a lot of variety in the levels, and you just kind of have to...
It's true.
...keep pushing forward.
Wizards and... I would call it Wizards and Warriors level design.
Okay.
Is what I would compare
I can
to,
go for that.
Most of all. It's not quite as bad as Home Improvement level design, which is its own...
Jesus Christ.
Well, because these are not labyrinthian levels. They're just kind of, like, big open spaces that you jump around.
Hey, go, like, hey, try to jump through that wall. Maybe it'll work. Maybe it won't. You don't know.
They're just kind of dull overall. And like when they try to do more, that doesn't always work. Like the bullfighting level was like alternatively boring and frustrating.
Well, like very quickly they start to introduce like here's a pit that you fall in and die instantly. I hope you didn't accidentally jump into it because it's just going to be there. You can't see it because you're way higher up and you'll just fall. It's like, what?
It was very Home Improvement, Earthworm Jim type thing. But, I mean, here before we rank it, I just want to say, like, I do want to give this game credit for at least they cared. Yeah. At least they cared. They respected the source material. They couldn't make a good game, but bless their hearts, they tried.
My feelings on this game was that they wanted to make, and this is like, I think they got it. They wanted to make a Bugs Bunny simulator. You know, they thought, what does Bugs Bunny do? He has, like, goofy things that he does, and then he affects things, like he kills things or whatever, they get knocked out, and that's kind of like, that's what he does, so we'll make that into a game. But somewhere along the way they were like, oh, but you have to make it a crappy platformer, and it's like, okay, that messed it all up, because
maybe a platformer just isn't the right genre for Looney Tunes game. Is that it?
What do you that's what I was going to ask Bob, is like, what do you do with Bugs Bunny if you're going to make a game? Like, the single best Warner Brothers animation game is probably Treasure's Looney Tunes, or no, I'm sorry, Tiny Toons game for the GBA. It's probably the best one that was ever
The Tiny Toons in general had much better, or at least more playable games.
Yeah,
like,
Konami handled a fair slice of them too, so that was actually pretty quality.
That's the thing. They had actual real talent with those.
Yeah,
this game kind of doesn't.
Okay, so you got like Buster Bust Loose, is that what you're talking about? Like,
yeah,
I would say,
that one and,
good,
the,
but...
and the NES Tiny Toons, also a good game, pretty tough.
That was pretty
and
good.
The one the Genesis is pretty good too, Buster's Hidden Treasure.
That is pretty good. Yeah, okay, uh-huh. good point. Tiny Toons
so
games were not bad. Treasure, I still think, made the best Warner Brothers animation game.
More. Definitely.
It's really good. Have you played Astro Boy?
Astro Boy? I did that recently.
It's exactly the same.
Oh, sweet. Oh, that's good.
But it is because these games, again, like the Tiny Toons cast they're not omnipotent super creatures like the Looney Tunes cast. They, again, they kind of actually bad things happen to them. Not
I mean,
as much.
Yes, okay. So, like, you got to understand, like, there are different versions of Bugs Bunny. Like,
yes, definitely. There's
the Chuck Jones Bugs Bunny that's, like, an omnipotent, like, super snarky, like, god among rabbits, you know? But there's also, like, different earlier versions of Bugs Bunny that weren't quite the same. And
if you look at something like, and, you know, we did talk briefly about Disney, you know, like, you know, there are, like, Disney cartoons where it's, like Mickey and Donald have to move a chest of drawers into an apartment. Like, that's the whole episode or whole cartoon. You can't see Bugs Bunny doing that. Like, he'd just be like, oh, it's already there, because that's
right. I mean, the problem is, like, with these classic American cartoons, like, the best you can do is probably Popeye. Like, that's the one that's best suited to
Popeye hasn't game. Really been known for being a lot of great games either.
No,
like
he could be in a good game quite readily.
Like, you just have the
Miyamoto, like, arcade Popeye is really, really damn good. We don't remember it very well because they can't make it again. They can't reproduce it. They can't put it on Virtual Console. It's gone. But it is a very, very good game. And it is very well suited to its source material. But, yeah, after that, like, yeah, there's no good Popeye games, and it sucks. But Popeye is the ultimate. Like, if you were going to make, like, I'm going to make a classic, you know, 1930s cartoon character game, video game, you would do Popeye. It's just, like, nobody wants to touch it now because it's not popular anymore. But I do want to say, about Rabbit Rampage is it looks really good. It's not a good game, but it looks really beautiful, and the people who made it cared about what they did. And I want to give them credit for making a gorgeous SNES tribute to, you know, theatrical cartoon shorts of the 1940s.
I mean, it's very clear where, you know, what they wanted to do with the game is pretty clear. They wanted to make a pretty referential thing to Warner Brothers and Bugs Bunny more specifically. That was what they wanted to do. They just couldn't get a good game out of it at the same time.
Agreed. Where do we want to put, like, I'm thinking, like, below, I'm thinking it's, like, in the Yoshi range. Like, I do want to give it props. They at least made it look gorgeous, and it does. And the enemies aren't generic enemies, and they could have been.
I mean, look, you've got the Yoshi range. I'm willing to give it a tiny bit more credit, like, in the sense that I think this game's got shoots a lot higher than Lost Battle.
Here's what I'm thinking. I'm going to put it, like, right below King's Quest V.
So, Tenga, what do you think?
I was thinking of placing it even slightly higher than Bob's suggestion, but we don't want to give too much credit because fundamentally the game itself still is pretty mediocre.
Here's my reasoning is, like King's Quest V, they're both games that are really nice to look at. They have great production values, but the actual games really are not great to play.
100% true.
I mean, yeah. So the question is, just like, compared to Friday the 13th, I mean, I will say, like, Friday the 13th doesn't, it tries its best to actually work with its source material. It doesn't.
And it does, yeah, it does take the concept of the movies and turn it into a game-like concept that has replay value.
So, not, you know, like, great, I think, but, you know, they did, like, they put a lot of effort, because it's a Commodore 64 game, they can't make it sparkle, like, nearly as much as an SNES game.
I don't think it's, the Friday the 13th is that close to the movies, given that you don't actually fight the actual Jason in that one.
But
what do you? I mean,
well you didn't fight Jason in the first Friday the 13th also. So.
I mean, like, it's definitely based on the first movie, which I think was kind of a bit more vague about. Like, Jason wasn't Jason until the third movie. Keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Like, he was Jason in the second movie, but he wasn't the same. He was just kind of like a weirdo that lived in a cabin.
No, he had the bag. He got the iconic hockey mask halfway into 3, so that was more or less the official turning point.
I mean, ultimately, I personally, because, like, this game is a great game to look at. You can look at a couple of screenshots, you can look at a little video, but I wouldn't play it. I would probably rather at least play Friday the 13th, because it has, like, the gameplay is kind of a little bit more there. It's like, oh, you run up and smack people and you try and make sure people don't get killed. They've got a coherent game going. This game didn't have a coherent game going. They fumbled a lot on the actual game component, which I think is a big shame for it. So I personally would put Friday the 13th above it, but that's what are you guys? I think Xerxes is the one who has to...
I agree. I agree with you, Cal.
Okay, so between Friday the 13th and The Last Battle, then, final offer?
Done. That's all for this episode of Hardcore Gaming 101's Top Games Podcast. Special thanks goes out to the nominators for this episode, which are at Gord Captain and at Peter Barbera or Pete Barbero 1 on Twitter. And as well, thanks as well to Cleveland Gamer on iTunes for nominating those games. And thanks to those of you we haven't gotten to yet. We will be getting to you soon. And I want to also thank my lovely co-hosts and compatriots and our editor, Jeff Rudd, and our theme song composer, Miteki. And of course, the support and feedback of listeners like you. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. You can also help us out by subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, where you will find awesome video versions of this very podcast, each split up per game. You can help us out by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. But most importantly, help us claw our way into the podcasting firmament by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Name a game in that 5-star review, and we will rank it on the quick fast. Do it or we'll charge 50,000 credits for our tutorial. Until next week, keep keeping it real.